This is John Costa with Rob Watson, and we're recording this episode of Spotlight on Heritage. And we're at the hotel, Belmont Hotel, here on Newark. I'm sure lots of people walk past this hotel, Rob, probably without realising that it's actually got a business centre to it as well. And this big table that we've rented today in the Orange Room. And we've got a guest that's come up from Darn South. Sue Batchelor, how are you?
Fine, came from Somerset.
Somerset, yes. Down south. Yeah, that's down south for us, you see.
Is it? Okay.
From here in the middle. So tell us a little bit about Alma's story. Who is she to you? In what relation is she to you?
Alma was my aunt.
Yeah.
Born in 1923. My mum was born in 1938. They grew up here in Leicester. And Alma never married. She was poorly, lived through the war. So... growing up, she was a lovely auntie, and I knew she was careful with things. I knew she had a love of Leicester and a love of art, and the family saved things. My dad called it hoarding, but they saved things. But she was so detailed and precise. We left Leicester in 1965, but I would have holidays with her. So she was a lovely aunt. And
so you have memories of coming to Leicester and staying with
your aunt? Yes, and my granny and granddad in Copsall Street. Granddad died in 76, so I remember him. Granny died 83, and they were such a close, loving family. They'd been childhood sweethearts, but granddad wouldn't marry till after the war, and he went to France. And the home was a little terraced house with an outside toilet, and we visited as children, but it was just full of love. And Alma and Mum and Granny and Grandad were very close. Mum, we left in 1965 because of my dad's job, but at least I came for holidays. And Alma would come to visit in Manchester quite a few times. She came to my brother's wedding.
And she was a prolific letter writer as well, wasn't she?
Yes.
Well, so many letters between exchanging between the family.
They all were, because when we left in 65, there was no emails, there was no text. They didn't even have a landline. So there's hundreds of letters. Granny and my mum exchanged letters every week. Alma did. When they went on holidays, they would write a letter a day. You'd write it one day, it would arrive the next. And it describes all the little things now that people would put into a text or an email. You know, the cat's okay, what I've had for dinner. So,
but it's that kind of small
minutia
of detail, isn't it? Which is, would be in a text message or an email now, isn't it?
And it was all in letters, and it was the contact between them all. So my granny would come to visit us a lot in Sale as well. And my granny had had a very sad life, but she was the kindest, such a loving person. And she kept in touch with soldiers that were billeted with them in World War II. There's so many stories that have evolved and I found in the letters. And Alma wanted items to go to the Applegate Museum, but they've made it into a pub, apparently. Or something.
Well, yes, of course, the Applegate Museum, she would know, would be Wigston House, which used to be for the fashion and stuff. And now it's a pub.
Yes. So, yeah. And she went to a costume course there.
This is what fascinates me about Alma. She's into making fashion, did a fashion course, then she went to adult ed and did all kind of drawing and art.
Yes.
And of course, that's how we met, because adult ed put you in touch with me.
Because I found her jewellery kit. Yes. Yeah. She made jewellery, and I knew that she did all these drawings, and she did a lot of artwork school reports and school art, Medway, Moat Road. She did all the art, just self-taught, all those little details. Then after she worked in a school uniform outfitters and then for gents. And then when she retired, she went to adult education, and then that's later items. But when I found her jewellery making kit, Mum had mentioned that she made jewellery. That's when I contacted the college, because there's tiny little packets of jewellery things, of craft. I knew the family loved sewing and craft. Everybody, my granny made lace, made rugs. So they just were creative. And she just loved, and then she loved the theatre and the shows and dance and ballet. And how on earth she did those sketches over those years, I don't know.
Well, it's definitely one of the things to aim for, isn't it, is to have some of her items on display, I think, at adult ed. And I know you're going off to adult education tomorrow with some items as well. So hopefully we'll be able to get to the situation where we can actually get an exhibition sorted.
Yes, and there's the photos as well.
So I want to bring Barbara in here. So Barbara's joined us this morning from Friends of Welford Road Cemetery. And I know you're going to be showing Sue around on Tuesday, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So what kind of things are you hoping to show her with what you've been finding?
Maps of the cemetery. It's hard to find your way around because it's a Victorian garden cemetery. There's lots of curly paths. There's no marks on the ground to show exactly where you are. So there's maps of the whole cemetery, and then there's individual maps showing all the individual plots to help you guide to them. So because she's come so far away and there's so many graves that she wanted to try and visit, I thought it was best if I met her and took her to them, because it's an art form trying to find them. It's a bit better at the moment because the grass has all mostly been cut. So sometimes this time of year it's quite long, but with the dry spell it's not too bad.
Now, Sue's got a really big sort of collection that you've been able to see, as all of us have been able to see here for today for the very first time, all connected with people, places and events and stuff. But obviously, you know, everybody's going to end up somewhere that you're doing your Friends of Welford Road Cemetery. So how many people are going to be there that you're hoping to show Sue on Tuesday?
Well, I've got about 7 graves, but there's quite a few in each grave because you can have anything up to 6 people in a plot. And Sue did email me a big long list, which I've been working my way through. So I've printed them all off. I think she's found more relatives than she knew she had. By looking
and I'm
at
sure
them.
There's more out there.
Yes, there is. Definitely is more in our cemetery. Anybody who was born in Leicester, or died in Leicester between 1855 and when Gilrose Cemetery opened, it was the only place you could be buried. So if you've got lots of Leicester family throughout those years, then you've got loads of relatives.
So if you're interested in
that period,
that is the place.
Yes, because 1855 they closed all the churchyards to new burials because it was getting a bit insanitary.
Yes, and this is the thing. You look here, you mentioned Gopsall Street, so we'll bring you back in here about where they lived, and then you've got all of these like sort of leisure time pamphlets and programs of events and the theatre and stuff and different people's activities. And of course, we're talking about now, which is a period pre the internet, where on pre mobile phones, pre landlines, where people were using and taking the time to write to each other or going off and participating in an activity in their leisure time.
Yeah, I mean, Alma loved, there's lists of what was on at the cinema. They went to the Abington, the theatre. Socialising, and my granny was a member of the Mother's Union, the Evergreens. That's the main thing, the family. It was the contact with people. Everybody chatted. When I came to visit, we went to the bus stop. By the time the bus came, my granny knew everybody. She knew the life stories. And it's about that contact with people and chatting that I inherited from my mum and my aunt and my granny.
I can see that.
So it's the contact, but the socialising before the internet, that's what people did. You there's a lot of events, and then there's the historical events, there's the events they went to. So yes, it was a big it was a whole different era, wasn't it?
It's very different, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, the great thing is you've also been, so you and I connected through adult education because I run the Saturday Heritage Fairs there and Military History Live, and so they knew I would probably be interested in your collection. And obviously we've got Barbara who's here from the cemetery, and you've also been in touch with Mike up at the Stonygate Tram Depot.
Yes.
So tell us, was that relation to your grandfather, was it?
Yes, that actually started, I joined the Leicester Transport Heritage Trust on behalf of my mum. We came to the Belmont in 2022 because my mum was born on Mother's Day, 27th of March 1938, which happened to be Mother's Day. And my granny had lost a little baby girl, Angela, in between Alma and her. So having my mum in 1938, when they were both in their 40s, on Mother's Day, it's always special, but it was special. 2022, we came here to the Belmont, and for her special birthday, I contacted various people. One of them was the Transport Trust because of Grandad, and then I've been sending, there was emails between Mike and Chris and Andy, I think it is. So that membership, Mum loved it. I got her, she had a newsletter. They've put articles in about my granddad because he was with them for a long time. So when I first joined, he's in their Wheels magazine, several features. There was one recently, because as I find things, I've been emailing it to them. And my mum loved that as a present. And then when she passed away last year, I took on the membership and the raffle and as fundraising. And I get all the emails about the events, but I live in Somerset, so I can't get to all the events. But they, so yeah, that was my granddad, Joseph Allen. Well, he's called Al. Yeah. So mum knew about that, the trust. And that meant a lot to her because she was so proud of granddad.
So I'm going to bring Rebecca in now. Rebecca, you've been a regular feature at my Saturday Heritage Fairs down at Adult Education and Military History Live and stuff. You're interested in this kind of area. And you, thank you for coming along and joining us today with someone else that's going to come and talk to us in a moment, Ellen, on the podcast. What's your initial take on seeing this? We're all quite shocked. Are you in the same as us?
Well, when I arrived, actually, I was quite surprised to see just how many articles and photographs and all the little things that your family have saved. Most families would have thrown this all out. But it tells the story of your family through the ages, through from the Victorian era, going through into the 1900s, the Edwardian era, through the First World War, through their 1920s and 30s. And I can see that your mum was really influenced by it's your aunt.
Both, yes.
Yeah. By the 1930s films and movies and the theatre and the glamour, it really influenced them. And it shows that story of the family progression through right all the way through to the 1980s and the 1990s. Everything is there to tell the family's history. Everything.
What I like as well is the fact that it's all annotated as well, and notes and where it was from, and you know, I mean, right from Adult Education, where it was the courses that Alma took and who the tutors were and what the dates were. That's going to really help with Adult Education. Hopefully they might even have notes. Wouldn't it be wonderful if some of these tutors were still alive? Yes. In order to be able to do that. But also the theatres and when she went, and there's tickets and there's stubs and stuff. It's absolutely fascinating. Mm. And I think just pick up on one point you made there as well, Rebecca, is the fact that these are the things that a lot of families would probably throw away.
It is.
There's Sue, there's like receipts, aren't there, and all sorts of things that she bought and things like that. It's absolutely amazing. So I think it's a really interesting collection. And of course, there's a great deal of photographs as well, that some of them known, some of them unknown, that we all need to be able to find. So, Rebecca, what else particularly caught your attention?
I think, like you say, the letters are incredibly special. They're very personal. The photographs and the way that you've actually put it together, and actually it must have taken you hours and hours to go through this and actually just mark it all, look at it, find out who each person was, because I've got pictures from my family and I can't tell you who they are. So, you know, hats off to you, because that must have taken absolutely hours to actually put this together and actually put all the labels on everything and sort it all out. And the care.
It's great to be here, seeing it all and it laid out, and everybody being able to have a view of it and bring different things as well. So, Barbara, can I bring you in as well, if that's all right? Just how many inquiries do you get, roughly, for people to find their graves? Does it tend to go in fits and starts?
Yes, it does. Yeah. We have, they're a bit like buses.
That's a nice link to the transport people there.
Yeah, you have one or two, and then you get like, last Saturday, we just had a stream of people, one after the other, coming in from Australia, other parts of the country. It was quite an eclectic mix last week. I think the sun brought them all out.
Yeah. And I know on a previous recording of the podcast, when we were speaking to our good friend of the podcast, Sue Lester from the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society, and she was saying, we were talking about how, you know, things on the television, documentaries, those kind of things have a real kind of impact on, suddenly you get this flood of inquiries.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Is it the same with...
It's the same with us, yeah. As soon as Who Do You Think You Are new series comes on, the amount of inquiries goes up.
Yeah.
And we have got, I mean, there's in excess of 213,000 people buried there, so I'm sure we'll carry on getting inquiries.
Is that the actual number of people?
Up to 1950. 213,000. And then there's some more after that. Yeah, you can't be buried there now unless you've got a family grave. that's got a space in it, and Sue's got one or two spaces left if she wants to use them.
There's space in there if you want to use it.
Yes.
You're listening to John Costa and Rob Watson on Spotlight on Heritage. And this week's recording, we're Sunday morning. We're at the Belmont Hotel on Newark for a very special visit from Sue Batchelor, who's come up from Somerset with a collection from her family. Alma's Story, we're calling it at the moment, aren't we? Absolutely amazing to see all this stuff. And thank you so much for coming up for the weekend and bringing it all with you. And it's great to have all of these friends and supporters as well here to kind of give you some feedback and stuff. It's quite emotional, isn't it?
It's very nice. It's nice to be back in Leicester because I used to come as a child. So, yes, it's nice to come back. I went for a walkabout yesterday and I found things I remembered. So that was good.
Good thing about Newark, it doesn't change very
much.
That was good. It's the bits when you turn left and right off Newark that tend to change.
And I knew the names of the streets. Mum described shopping in Granby Street, and I knew the fish market from years ago and the clock tower. They're all still there. So.
And Goxall Street isn't a million miles away from here either.
I haven't been this visit, but 2022 I did walk down there. And, of course, 13 St Peter's Road, where a lot of these photos were taken. That's where my granny, Gladys Knight, but Alma... My mum, they moved there to 45 Goxall Street.
Now, what I will put as a link on this podcast for people listening is a link through to Highfields Remembered, which was back in the 90s, I think, was an oral history project. And I'll put the link on there and people can actually listen to Alma's voice being interviewed at home.
Yes.
Which is amazing, isn't it? Because it's one of the first things that I found when I was talking to you about this project.
Yeah.
And then to actually hear the lady as well,
she had
it really kind of circled it for me.
Yes. She had a very characteristic... Alma was very... My mum and Alma were very close as sisters, but obviously mum married and left and had us. Alma stayed in Leicester, had been poorly and all the rest, but... she was very independent as she got older, and she was quite strong person, but in a kind way. So it's the sort of lady that most people would walk down the street and, you know, little old lady. She actually got mugged, sadly, twice. She got burgled in her own home. She's very tiny, tiny little lady walking with a headscarf. Most people wouldn't bat an eyelid. But speaking to her, and I've got the transcript of those interviews. I haven't actually listened to it. I got the book for my mum's birthday, actually, 2022, a copy of it. We knew that she'd done that, and she was very strong-willed and a character.
I think, actually, there we go. I was about to say she's a character, and you ended with that word exactly, because I think this is what we need to be thinking about when we do community heritage projects, is those kind of strong characters that everyone knows. Now, one of the things you probably may not even remember telling me this, we've spoken for hours on WhatsApp, haven't we? And this is actually the first time we've met, so this is pretty cool, is the fact that she wrote about things like to people in her letters and stuff about her neighbours and what they were cooking and stuff like that. And actually, for Goxall Street, there's probably an opportunity to actually start filling in some of the gaps of who these people were and stuff. And I know Sue from the Family History Society is particularly interested in people looking at, you know, like history of a house and stuff like that, house through time and streets and stuff like that. So that's probably one of those 757 projects we're going to pick up after this Sunday morning, which we're probably all going to regret for the rest of our lives. But let me just bring in Ellen here as well. Now, Ellen, it was great for you to come along. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, I know that you've got this World War One research project going on with these pictures that you found in a charity shop, and I just thought you'd be perfect for this kind of thing, because it's where do you even start identifying some of these people?
It is true. Sometimes you just have something so small, like the plaques that we found in the charity shop, just had names, regiment, date of death, age of death, that's it. Where do you go from that? You know, what battalion were they in? Where were they from? Where were they living? Who are their family? But, you know, once you kind of go down that rabbit hole, it's kind of like a snowball building up. The more information you find, the more you kind of branches off into this and this and this. You just got to find that little in first of all to, you know, get in and then, you know, carry on going along.
And it is, and like you said, it is a rabbit hole. And also it's something we never mention in family history and like military. You're not mentioning rabbit holes. Like, it's terrible because it puts people off. Everybody in the room's laughing. I wish we were live streaming because everyone was juggling them. But it's so true. I mean, from your perspective, what was the hardest thing to do when you first started that project? Was it Was it starting, or is it kind of your first brick wall? Because I'm thinking here is about helping Sue out, because I'm sure she's had a few brick walls along the line. But so she's got lots of friends and lots of supporters and been very lucky, and lots of people that I recognise as well. So
Starting was definitely the first kind of hurdle to jump. I was 16 when I started, so I didn't know what I was doing. You know, my granddad does some family history, so, you know, he was aware of certain sites that you can start on. But, you know, when you're kind of, I didn't have any connections. I didn't know where to go to ask, you know, how do I find this? How do I find this? So starting is daunting sometimes, because you've got, even though it's not a lot of information there, you know that there is a lot of information to find. You just don't know how to find it. Where do I begin? Starting is difficult.
So I'd like to bring you in here, Nick, because I know, tell us that story about that photo you've got of someone from your family and you couldn't find it, and then actually how you discovered what the building was, because I think this is something that Sue's going to find really interesting.
Yeah, I love this photo. I love telling this story. I have already told this story already this morning. In 2014, I took out the war medals and photographs I became custodian of for the centenary of the beginning of the First World War. And I knew nothing about anything, the war medals or even the photography. I did know one of my grandfathers was on this photograph, and I knew what regiment he was in. He had his cap and cap badge there. But although the information on the back was wrong, we didn't give it a location, so we had no idea where it was. But I'm quite tenacious sometimes, and I'll keep gnawing at something. You don't always necessarily get an answer, but I looked on websites, historical buildings, because the building they were sitting in front was quite distinctive. It was like quite large pillars and inset balustrade to the wall, a large door, big steps, eight men sitting in front. But that building could have been knocked down years ago, so there's probably no hope of ever finding the location. But I never gave up. And how I found the location was very extraordinary, really, because I was a big fan of the drama series Victoria with Jenna Coleman in it. And it was season 2, episode 1. And I wasn't really watching this episode, although I was a big fan of it. I was working on the computer and listening to it and glancing over every so often. But I glanced over at the TV for a split second, and this image just almost slapped me in the face. It was such a connection with the TV screen and the photograph that I became, well, pause the TV. And I was so excited that I got in touch with the production company who made the programme Victoria. And they were quite excited as well. They loved the story about my grandfather convalescing in front of this building. And they agreed it looked very familiar. And they told me that they had filmed it at Harewood House up in Yorkshire. I have since been there and found the steps. I had seen Harewood House, actually, while looking at historic buildings, but they promote the back of the building with the ornate steps and gardens, etc. And they're sitting at the front, so I never found it that way. The point is how interesting it is to find it through a modern-day TV series. And if I was to promote anything, is that never give up on your research. If you're going down a tunnel of trying to research something, you'll go down one tunnel, another tunnel, another tunnel. But don't ever forget that people are coming the other way, and be aware of that and be open to finding information coming in your direction.
Yeah, I think this is what I always love about this story, and thank you for telling it again. And it's the same as you told it the last time, so that's good. There were no dragons in it this time. Yeah. So what I like about it is the fact is that look. You know, if it looks like it's a big country house or where someone might be convalescing or billeted or whatever, it's like there's two sides to the building. And there's the bit that tell you about and then the bit that they don't tell you about. So it's almost, don't give up. If you think it's something like that, then...
Whatever you do, this huge collection, this is more than one person's project. It's interesting to see that they're now going through a process of getting it seen. It's a very interesting family history, but there's so many different interests within this collection, trams and society, photographs of, I don't know what. There's so much information here, which will be of interest to many people. Don't ever give up, because you don't know what you'll find. Don't discard it. Have it in the back of your mind. Something may come up in the future.
And what's fascinating, Sue? Yeah.
Well, your story, I didn't realise. Did you see the folder with the Luton story?
I did, yes.
That's the first thing I handed him when he walked through.
That is exactly how that happened, because there's the original black and white photo of my granddad outside a house. And yep. I think I put in there, I knew, luckily I was, you know, I grew up with the photos. I knew which regiment and everything my granddad was in. I didn't know where that photo was. And I was on a Facebook page, and in between times found all these photos of the Gilbert family. I thought they were my granny's friends, and I still don't know the connection. My granny had been a hat maker. So Ethel Gilbert, Elsie Gilbert. That was a whole separate thing. And the address was 36 Highfield Road in Luton. And this was over several months. And then I put that on a page, and somebody put a picture of that house now. And that house is the same picture that my granddad's outside.
Yeah.
And then I found the connection with World War II and the Vauxhall factory being bombed and the younger son. And it's just one of those little threads. And those pictures were in separate albums. And my granny was very good friends with a lot of ladies. But the Gilbert family, there's loads of photos of them. And my granddad was there. And I don't know. I know they talk about private billets, but there's too many soldiers on the front of that house.
Yeah. Yeah. They might be a depot within the town. That depot, at the beginning of the First World War, there were so many people coming, hundreds of thousands. September, the service army, Kitchener's army, hundreds of thousands, September, October of 1914. They had nowhere to put them.
Mm.
So they went into people's houses.
Yeah.
And that's what that photo is. It's fantastic.
So for this final section, I want to touch on something that Nick mentioned there, and which Sue has been shouldering rather splendidly for quite a while now, which is since I've met her, hopefully I've made it a little bit easier rather than more complicated, is this feeling of being the custodian, that you feel responsible for telling this person's story, or luckily in on this occasion, Sue, you've got Alma's letter of wishes that she would like to do certain things with elements of the collection and stuff. So that kind of weight of being the custodian, how does that weigh on you?
Yes. I mean, I knew, obviously I went to Auntie Alma's funeral in 2003 and I've recently found obviously the will and the letter of wishes. But also after Alma died, I was chatting to my mum, because my mum kept saying, you know, what's going to happen with all the Leicester stuff? This was a huge task for my mum in 2003. We had to pack up Coxall Street. So my mum, bless her.
And nothing had changed, did it?
It was hardly touched. So we all came to help, and my aunt had not want, the house had a lot of items in it. My mum had done a lot of the boxing up. So some things were easy in so much as she said, granddad's items. The hardest ones were the ones with the letters. And I didn't find everything in one go, obviously. And I've now had to, it feels almost a little bit intrusive. I've had to go through items that my mum packed up, which Alma had stored. 90% were in paper bags. I have got so many paper bags from Leicester, Midland Educational, all the old shops. Alma had wrapped everything. My mum had put them into boxes. I've also got at home boxes of clothes, special toiletries, greetings cards. When I first opened the boxes, I opened them, photographed them and put them back. I didn't know. Each time I went to sale, I was bringing more boxes back. So if I'd have realised, hindsight's wonderful, I would have collated things then. But I've now, for this, collated World War One. These were not like this. My mum had a huge task, and it was upsetting for her. It was her family home, so she put them in boxes. Some items, when Alma died, we saved, obviously, the special, the big granddad's photo album. A lot of things stayed downstairs. But there wasn't space for everything, so it was boxed up in the loft, and Mum and I had gone through the photos in 2018, and she started to worry what was going to happen. And I might have seen Alma's letter of wishes in 2003, but obviously then I found it again. So, and I knew that she'd done Highfields Remembered. So yes, the finding of everything and looking through it, and letters, there's loads more at home. This is not everything. I have got more photos, more letters.
So as a percentage, what is this of the collection that you are the custodian of?
It's difficult because if you can either do a percentage physically,
or your dining room in particular, I'm thinking of your
yes. Room, yeah. There's still boxes on the floor. There is still, I tell you what, I've got a lot of family Bibles. I've got Emma Sophie Dingley's Bible, who was my four times great grandmother. I've got loads of Bibles, prayer books. I've got loads of special books that belong to Alma, loads of family letters, loads of packets of photos, a box full of toiletries from the 40s, 50s, a box of clothes. So percentage-wise, I realised that when I found a box, Mum had done a big box, and inside, oh, there's stamps. I've not looked at the stamps or the Christmas decorations yet. Mm-hmm. When I went through the boxes, I kind of started to... It was nice when I got a box with programmes, because it's interesting, it's not too emotional and personal. The hardest thing was, like the little green box at the end, full of little diaries and notes. I haven't even been through all of that. There are more of those. So when I got a shoebox could take me a lot longer than one great big box with more straightforward things in. So it's hard percentage-wise, whether you physically, a tiny little pile of photos, I've identified a lot of people. And there's the whole saga of the Bates and the Hargreaves, the Hunkup family. It's trying to sort of join all the little pieces together like a little octopus, you know, and you sort of got all these little pieces.
And I think also you're incredibly passionate about it. You know, every time I've spoken to you, you're exactly the same when we speak for like, you know, 45 minutes on WhatsApp audio, is the fact that you don't want to not value any particular piece of it because you feel as if, you know, it's all important, isn't it? I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges. And I'm hoping that that can be one of the things that will be able to help you. And today's the start of what we can do.
I think with hindsight, when I visited Granny and Grandad, I remember seeing Alma doing sketching. And my granddad, like a lot of them, never spoke of the war. And I've discovered other sad stories from in-laws. Nobody spoke of the war. Mm. So I knew my granddad had been a bus driver. But if only I could now ask them. I can't ask anybody. That's hard.
Yeah. Well, Sue, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you. Yeah.
And thank you to Rebecca and to Barbara and to Ellen and Nick as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow.